Thanks for joining us on a Saturday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. This is a crossover episode with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy. We released the podcast on his feed, but I wanted to make sure you guys got to it. Everything you need to know on the Brooklyn Nets fantasy basketball prospects next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. We're back with another of the season preview shows. Today we're going to be talking about the Brooklyn Nets, and to talk about the Nets I'm joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Nets podcast, and that is Gavin Shaw. Gavin, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Josh, excited to be here. Had a lot of fun last year. Ready to do it again.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this Nets team, which is pretty interesting. It probably doesn't have, you know, one real star player in it, but it's got 11, 12 guys who can be really useful options depending on how the playing time shakes out. So there's going to be lots of discussion about those guys. Michael Bolton's ready.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it indeed, Gavin. We will start off with the question that I've started all these off with, and that is the projected record for this team. You went with 33-49. That's a significant jump up from last season. It's a half a win above the Vegas over-under, which is sitting at 32.5. I'm pretty much in step with you here that I think they will be able to push over 30 wins. Is that coming from off-season moves or internal improvement, do you think?
I would say a combination of the two. The Nets were really aggressive about shoring up their weaknesses. They essentially didn't have a backup center last year, often playing Quincy Acey, who I think is really only about 6'7", as a backup five, and they got Ed Davis. They kind of shored up their guard depth, adding Shabazz Napier, who I think is a guy who's pretty consistently underrated and brings a lot to the table offensively. And then you look at the guys already on the roster and you kind of expect an inherent jump for someone like D'Angelo Russell. This is his first full offseason as a Net. I know the intel we've heard from the Nets is that he's shooting the ball a lot better and he's potentially going to be a more dynamic shooter. And ideally, he's improved on the defensive end as well. And then guys like Caris LeVert and Jared Allen, who you look at as the two building blocks of the team, I expect both of those two to be significantly better. So I think the combination of improved depth and internal development means there's not really any clear-cut weaknesses on this team outside of the lack of top-end talent. And because of that, I think they're going to be relatively competitive night in and night out. And I see 33 wins as very feasible because of that.
Locked On NFL just got awesome. Check out this new lineup. Every Monday, Matt Williamson will have the biggest stories with the local experts of the Locked On Podcast Network. Every Tuesday, he'll be joined by former NFL quarterback Sage Rosenfels. Wednesday, the thoughts and numbers of Pro Football Focus's Mike Renner. And mark down every Thursday for Mike Sando of ESPN. That's right, Mike Sando with Matt Williamson Thursdays on Locked On NFL. Make sure you follow Locked On NFL on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts to get all this amazing content. Locked On NFL just got awesome. Locked On has the college spirit. We've expanded into college sports. If you roll tide or quack like a duck, if you love your Boomer Sooner or your Bear, Wildcat, or Razorback, Locked On has your team's daily college sports podcasts. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for your Locked On College. Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You mentioned D'Angelo Russell. He's a very interesting player for fantasy. You've got him here as your projected leading scorer on the team. I don't think it's not that easy to argue with that, to be honest, because that's how I see it panning out as well. Of course, the knee injuries did limit him last season, but as soon as he returned, he showed what he can do. Ended up only playing 26 minutes per night. He comes in my opinion, as the starter, almost no doubt. Is that how you see it, Gavin?
No, certainly. I think it's almost a matter of how much they have invested in D'Angelo Russell. Obviously, after the infamous Celtics trade, the Nets were at an enormous talent deficit, and then they trade Brook Lopez, the stalwart of their franchise. They trade the 27th pick that turned into Kyle Kuzma to get Russell. So they just have a lot of, asset equity invested in Russell and in Russell's success, and the fact that outside of Jared Allen, and you can make a case for Caris LeVert. He's the Net with the most potential to be a star down the road. He is far and away the best draft pedigree of anyone on this Nets team. So I think there are a lot of reasons for the Nets to be invested in, particularly because they can theoretically extend him this offseason. So it's kind of a do or die year for Russell. And because of that, I think they're going to give him every opportunity to be the leading scorer, to be the lead ball handler, to dominate the ball, even if you can argue objectively that someone like Spencer Dinwiddie was maybe a better player last year. I think the Nets are going to give Russell every opportunity to succeed and elevate his game this season.
He averaged 15.5 points last year with 4 rebounds, 5 assists, almost a steal. The shooting wasn't great, a true shooting of under 51%. He hit 2 threes, and he was the 108th ranked player. Now, if we're assuming he's going to play more than the 25.7 minutes, which I think is a decent bet, he's going to jump up there. Yahoo's got him ranked as the 81st best player. I think he's a significant chance to get ahead of that, and also a significant chance to perhaps push into the top 50. Now, I think the top 50 would depend on him getting 31 or 32 minutes a night, and we know from history, Kenyaka has been quite reticent to give guys that level of minutes. But down the stretch last season, we saw some players start to get those elevated minutes, in particular Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Damari Carroll was getting some minutes over 30 per game. Not every game, but it was starting to happen. And I think if this Nets team, and we heard Atkinson come out with the talking, you know, we're not going to be tanking, we haven't spoken about that word this season, that if Russell is showing that he can start leading this team, that those minutes should push up. And at the very least, Gavin, they'll be higher than the 25 per game he played last year.
No, I certainly agree with that. And again, it really is all about sample size with Russell. And because of his injury last year, which resulted in him missing the majority of the season, the Nets, I don't think they felt like they got a really good look at what Russell could be. And I don't think they felt he got a fair chance to develop and really figure out how he fit with the Nets on both ends of the floor. And because of that, they're going to give him every single opportunity this season to either sink or swim. And I think that's going to result in more minutes for him, even though it's obviously Kenny Atkinson's preference that he doesn't overtax his guys. And with the depth they have at that guard position with Spencer Dinwiddie and Shabazz Napier behind him, there's a lot of reason not to play Russell a lot of minutes, but I think he's going to be out there more often than not. I see him pushing up to that 30-minute mark this year, and the Nets really going all out and trying to see what they have in him.
Yeah, that's what I've got him at, is just below the 30-minute mark for this season. Could easily go over, could go under, but I think he's a solid bet to beat that rank on Yahoo at number 81. Another player that is entering his restricted free agency summer, that is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Let's talk about his injury, which he suffered over in China. He suffered a groin strain. Is there any indication that's going to cause him to miss any training camp time?
No, I haven't necessarily seen that. That being said, the Nets are inherently cautious with their players, and They know that even though the idea, at least, is that they're not going to tank this season, they obviously don't have any realistic aspirations of some kind of playoff run this year. And because of that, they know the greatest asset is just the fact that they have guys like Hollis-Jefferson on their roster. And he's someone they could potentially resign, and they're going to be extremely cautious with his injury. So I wouldn't be surprised if they take it really slow with him at the start of training camp. Maybe he misses a little bit of preseason. Based on everything I've read, I haven't seen anything indicated that he's going to miss any part of the regular season. So that would be a big concern for me from a fantasy perspective.
He played 28 minutes a game last year, 14 points, 7 rebounds, a steal per game. And weirdly, his steal rate, which was really high in his rookie season, has come down dramatically every season. And I'm not sure exactly why that is. It's been like, that was something where we're talking about a guy, maybe this guy can get 1.7, 1.8 steals per game. And now we're down at, hey, is he ever going to get 1 per game? It's been a weird decline in that area. But last year, he was the 93rd ranked player, the best Brooklyn Net player in terms of overall fantasy value. This year, Yahoo inexplicably has him ranked 139th. So to me, that's a no-brainer as a real value guy in that spot. I don't think he's going to last to 139, but he is one of those later round guys. And he does, heading into that fourth season, have an opportunity to push 40. If he can hit at least more than 22% of his threes or whatever, 24% he hit last season, that helps. That adds on. If that steal rate does actually revert, not even fully back to his rookie season, but at least something more respectable than what it was last year, then he can rise 10, 20, 30 spots in the rankings pretty comfortably. So I think he's a solid guy to have a look at as a real strong late-round value player in your fantasy drafts. Now, the breakout player, this warms my heart, Gavin, that you have got my man Caris LeVert there. He was a lottery talent a couple of years ago who slid in the draft due to the broken feet. Or broken foot multiple times. That hasn't been a problem in the NBA. He's looked good when he's been out there. I guess we've talked about guard depth already, but even at the position that he plays most often, at the 2 and the 3, there's still players there. We've got Alan Crabb, who's likely going to be the starting shooting guard in that role to take minutes away. There's Joe Harris, who they re-signed, Damari Carroll, who's been starting at the 3. I wish we could see more out of Caris and they would just install him as a starter, but he's still probably going to be stuck in that 26, 27-minute role that he played last season, I believe.
Yeah, no, I'm generally with you, and I think there's definitely a path where if Karras proves to have taken a big leap and he turns into a borderline star next year, which again, if you don't really watch the Nets, that sounds like a bit of homerism on my part. But I really do believe he has that capability. I mean, you watch him even over the course of 5 to 10 games, you see an elite ability to contort his body and finish at the rim. He's an extremely strong handle for a guy who's 6'7". And he really does have the makings of someone who can be a truly dynamic offensive player in this league with his ability to get to the rim and his jump shot, which really did come along after it was quite disastrous in the first month of the season. I could definitely see a scenario where if LeVert makes a leap, maybe they trade away someone like Damari Carroll or they deal Allen Crabbe. And obviously they have a lot invested in Crabbe, so maybe that's a little bit less feasible, but I don't know. I think there are avenues there where LeVert could turn it into a genuine fantasy asset later in the season. He's just the guy with an enormous amount of talent who hasn't necessarily gotten that opportunity yet. Despite the fact that they signed Shabazz Napier, I wouldn't be too worried about him having a big drop-off with the ball in his hands. Obviously, the Nets had a lot of injuries last year, so that kind of helped him, but I think when him and Napier are on the floor with bench units, he's going to be the guy handling the ball, and Napier is going to be spacing as a shooter on the perimeter. So I think LeVert's going to have plenty of time to rack up assists, rack up rebounds, and rack up points.
He's ranked 140th on Yahoo. I think that he's better than that. He does have that top 80 type ability. I'm not sure he'll necessarily get there. That's all going to be dependent on minutes, as it is with so many of these Nets players. But he does have that ideal type fantasy profile: assists, rebounds, steals, threes, points, decent efficiency if you ignore that start of last season. He is a pretty good shooter, and he has been throughout his time in college. He just did struggle in that early part of the season, and that tends to get burnt in people's heads. Oh, man, he's a terrible shooter, can't hit anything. And then he goes on a stretch of 3-4 months of shooting the ball fairly well, and that turned around his number. So I'm pretty interested to see exactly what LeVert is going to do for this coming season. At this point, Gavin, the Nets haven't signed anyone to any two-way deals, but they have a bunch of guys who they could potentially be looking at who they've signed to training camp deals with Mitch Creek, Theo Pinson, and Jordan McLaughlin. The rumor was that Pinson had been signed to that two-way deal, but it doesn't appear to have been confirmed at this point, unless I've missed something.
No, I think you're right. I think he only has the training camp deal after it was previously reported that he signed the two-way, but I'm in the same boat as you. I hadn't seen that. I would say out of the three guys, Mitchell Creek, Jordan McLaughlin, and Pinson, I would say Pinson is far and away the most likely guy to end up on an NBA roster. He just has a two-way ability. The other two don't. And he's a guy who kind of projects as your prototypical modern NBA wing if he can develop that three-point shot, and it looked a lot more promising in summer league than it did at any point during his time at North Carolina. So if he could turn into even an average three-point shooter, he's someone who certainly has both the athletic ability and I would even argue the skill set on offense to be a rotation guy in the league. He's sneakily a very talented passer. So Pinson, out of those three, is certainly the one I'm the most excited about.
Yeah, same. I think he's the most likely guy to have any sort of impact. But, of course, we talk about their wing depth quite often, and I haven't even mentioned the two guys that they took in the draft who do play at those 3/4 positions as well. Gavin, looking at this team in terms of the national perception, they're not a team that gets a huge amount of coverage despite being in New York City. What's something that maybe is a little bit underreported, misreported, something that may be a misconception about a player on this team, the team in general, their playing style? What's something that maybe gets Brooklyn people a little bit pissed about the way that they get portrayed?
You know, I was going to talk about Karis LeVert, but we already touched on him. So let me mention Joe Harris, a guy who I would probably argue the average NBA fan either has no idea who he is or just maybe a passing notion of like, oh, that guy's in the league. But he was sneakily, like, obviously at a relatively low volume. He was one of the most efficient scorers in basketball last year. He shot the highest percentage in the league on drives, and he was just ahead of LeBron James, and I think he was 4 or 5% ahead of any other player in the NBA. Combine that with hitting nearly 40% of his threes above the break after the All-Star break. He was the best three-point shooter in the NBA. So he's a guy, if he continues to improve, obviously just 26, I think turning 27 this season. He's someone who could continue to develop into one of the best bench players in basketball, and just because he was fairly irrelevant before last season, I think a lot of fans across the league don't necessarily know who he is, but Nets fans are extremely high on him, and they certainly appreciate his contributions. And it's that efficiency combined with the fact that he's just such a smart player always makes the right play. I really think he's an essential part of what makes this Nets team potentially competent this season.
Joe Harris finished second on the Brooklyn Nets in true shooting percentage. He was 63.4. Jarrett Allen was 63.6. So it just goes to show how efficient he is. As a perimeter guy, to post a true shooting of 63% is a crazy number. He is an elite three-point streaming guy who does it without hurting your percentages. Finished last season 49-83 from the field and from the line, and hit almost two threes per game with 11 points. Now, you're not getting any steals. He's not really getting assists. He's not a strong rebounder, but he can be that guy. Like, say, a Wayne Ellington or Troy Daniels, but those guys are more likely to hurt your field goal percentage than what Joe Harris is. He can score in other ways, and if he started getting to the line a bit more, which might be a bit of a struggle, but he could really start to be an impact guy. He's more of a 14 or 16 team league player, but those threes at that high efficiency is really interesting for a guy like for Harris. Now the Nets, Gavin, have been a team that's played at quite a fast pace over the past couple of seasons under Atkinson. They did drop off a little bit last season. Is there any, and it often happens with younger teams, they play quick, but as teams start to get better, that slowdown can occur. Is there any indication that they're looking to slow it down even further, or we're still going to be in that that top level of the NBA in terms of pace?
I'm interested to see how the recent rule changes in the NBA affect their pace, but I think if anything, they could potentially play a little bit faster this year, because Spencer Dinwiddie was really the slow down point guard, and I think he was responsible for their pace dropping off a little bit. He's a guy who really likes to survey the defense and analyze how he can best break it down and then call for a pick, wait for one guy to roll and make the pass that leads to the pass that scores a bucket. So he was really meticulous, and he's a guy who would certainly take his time on the offensive end, and if he didn't see anything he'd like, he'd be comfortable ISOing and pulling up for a shot as the shot clock wound down. D'Angelo Russell, he certainly has a little bit of that. He is occasionally a ball stopper, but it's somewhat offset by the fact that he's really, I think, one of the better outlet passers in the NBA and someone who really thrives in transition. He's brilliant in his ability to change pace, and his court vision, I think, is a skill that gets underrated across the league. I think he's transcendent. Like, you can put him up there with just about anyone in the NBA in terms of his ability to see an open floor, and it's his willingness to consistently make those passes. But it's interesting because he was replaced by Lonzo Ball in L.A. I actually think he embodies a lot of the same qualities as a passer, and just because he's more of a combo guard than Lonzo and obviously a little bit more selfish, that stuff gets a little bit underreported. But I think he's a really good ball mover, and because of that, with him getting more minutes, I think the Nets' pace is going to go up a little bit this season.
I think the pace is going to go up across the league. You mentioned the league rule changes, which Woj reported today. I'm releasing this podcast a few days later, about the offensive rebound shot clock not being reset to 24 seconds, but being reset to 14 seconds. So while a lot of offensive rebounds are just around the rim and you grab it and you put it back in, it's not going to have too much impact. It's those ones where they're a little bit deeper offensive rebounds and they kick it back out to the point guard and they reset. It's going to be 10 seconds less they're going to have now over the course of a game where teams may combine for 20 offensive rebounds in a game. Maybe that does enable an extra 2-3 possessions per game. Maybe that's overstating it, but that is a possibility, meaning a lot of numbers are going to go up across the board. So we'll see, you know, assists go up and rebounds go up and shot attempts go up. And it might mean we have, you know, more rushed shots. Therefore, field goal percentage may dip down in those sorts of situations. So it will be a change. It's not going to be favoring one team necessarily. It's right across the board. But if you're comparing performances this season versus last season, you might see everyone's numbers be slightly elevated. And I think that'll be the reason, whether that is, yeah, an extra 1-2 possessions per game due to this 14-second offensive rebound shot clock reset. So that'll be interesting to see exactly how that does develop over the course of the season. The most likely player to be traded, you have got down as Spencer Dinwiddie. I agree with that. I think that may be the case. He's on a very favorable contract, obviously. I've heard other people talk in the opposite direction, particularly Nate Duncan and Danny Leroux on their podcast thought that because of Dinwiddie's small cap hold, maybe they look to move someone like Russell, because then Dinwiddie enables them to preserve cap space for next season. But given the fact that I think they are invested in Russell as their starting point guard, and Dinwiddie, you can get him at that real value, and that could be a tremendous value for another team. Hey, let's get a guy who can be useful and have that low cap hold. They might be able to get some significant assets back. Why are you looking at Dinwiddie as that guy who's most likely to be traded?
I think it's exactly what you said. I think there's just clearly more of an investment in Russell, and getting Shabazz Napier, another guy on an extremely small cap hold. I think they have an option for him in the 2018-19 season. That's under $2 million. So they have their starter in Russell. They have a backup. And Dinwiddie, obviously, he fell off a little bit towards the end of the season, but he proved himself to be an extremely capable point guard last season. And I think in an offense surrounded by more talent, he would really thrive because he's a guy who just has an extremely high basketball IQ. He knows when and where to get his teammates the basketball. And again, I think with a little bit more talent to take some pressure off him, you'd really see his shooting ability come to light because he's a guy who took a lot of difficult three-pointers last year, and in a more equal opportunity offense or in an offense where he is not necessarily the focal point, he'd be getting looks on kickouts that he's not necessarily getting with the Nets. So I think he could be a real asset to a contender. He's a guy I'd feel very comfortable playing almost on any level. Like even if you threw him on the Cavs last year and you just said, all right, Spencer, you're the starting point guard on the Cavs, I think he would have been a real asset for them last season in the NBA Finals. So he's someone who could have a lot of value to teams across the league. And again, Sean Marks has shown that he doesn't really get attached to players. Jeremy Lin, a guy who was the heart and soul of this Nets team emotionally, who gave so much to the franchise in his 2 years here. I mean, Marks just traded him away like it was nothing. And obviously he was apologetic and he was just saying, like, I don't really think he fit. But Sean Marks is willing to do that. And a guy, and Spencer Dinwiddie, who was so integral to this team last year, like Sean Marks isn't going to get attached if he can get a first round pick for Spencer Dinwiddie and he feels like D'Angelo Russell is his point guard of the future, he's going to go ahead and do that. Now, conversely, I think that same principle applies to D'Angelo Russell. If he doesn't show he's improved defensively, if he doesn't fix up his jump shot, I could see Sean Marks cutting bait and saying, you know what, I'm not going to give you away for nothing this offseason. I'm going to go ahead and get an asset for you in the middle of the year. So I could see that flipping either way. Right now, Dinwiddie's a favorite, but we have to see if Russell's actually improved this season to know if that's actually going to come true or not.
Dinwiddie was the 100th ranked player last season in almost 29 minutes per game. Him getting back to that level is going to require a few things to happen, and one of those is going to either be Russell getting traded or him just being absolutely terrible or getting injured. So if everything goes according to how we think it's going to go, then Spencer's not going to be able to play that level of minutes. Now, he can share time with Russell on the court. We've seen that before. He's big. He can guard up positions as well. But his shooting was a real problem last year, only 39% from the field on a fairly significant amount of attempts, which was a real impact on your field goal percentage category. But he scored pretty well. He hit some threes. He got assists. He's not a high steals guy, which drops some of that value as well. So I think he could, he's at risk of being a little bit overdrafted this season. Although the rank on Yahoo at 133, I think is fine. And he does have that ability to push higher than that if those any of those Russell scenarios do actually take place. But he's a guy that, you know, put up tremendous advanced numbers. Real plus minus stuff was off the charts for Dinwiddie last season. Some of that's to do with how poor the other point guards on this team played. And that plays into that. I'm not sure Dinwiddie is necessarily as good as some of those numbers bared out during the season. He may have been a little bit overrated, especially for his overall fantasy contributions, and I do think he is going to fall off a little bit this season.
So that wraps up part one of our crossover with Josh Lloyd and Locked On Fantasy for part two. You can tune in on your Locked On Nets podcast feed this Monday. We'll have that out for you, and then a whole new week of content ahead. Keep it with Locked On Nets.